Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Today I'm going to talk to a very special person. Her name is Julia Romano, and she's written this beautiful book called Yoga Therapy for the Whole Mother. But as we discuss in the interview, I think all of us are mothers. We are all bringing ourselves to help people heal, to help them find out who they are, to get an identity for themselves so that they can use that to interface with the world and survive, but then eventually remember that that identity and that interface is not who I really am. I'm something so much larger, and there's something beyond me that I'm connected to. This idea of mothering, and it could be your clients, it could be your own children, it could be your siblings, it could be your parents, it could be your colleagues. Not that we're going to cross boundaries in motherhood, but the idea of bringing our heart, bringing our presence, bringing our potency to connect with humans that we care about. There's something very much mothering about that to me. And so this whole conversation, although it kind of is framed around Julia's book, Yoga Therapy for the Whole Mother, I think there's something also, in addition to that, so potent for us to take from this interview. And I really hope you enjoy it. I certainly did. And we'll talk on the other side about a few more things that maybe we can all take away from this interview. All right, so let's go meet Julia Romano. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour Season 9. When I had this idea about a year ago that we could take an entire year for all of you to come on the podcast and tell your stories, I had no idea how overwhelming the response would be and how amazing it would be to get to know so many of you, our faithful listeners. I've gotten to know friends and see faces and connect with hearts, all so many people that I didn't even know were out there, people just like you and I. I'm so grateful. And the response has been so large that I can't take any more stories for the rest of the year. There's many weeks where I have two podcasts every Thursday scheduled for recording to try to respond to this wonderful thing of having so many people willing to share. So we're no longer needing anyone to sign up for telling your story. If you really feel strongly, I could put you on a waiting list in case someone cancels. And I want to thank all the people who came forward to make this year on the Yoga Therapy Hour so successful. I'm so grateful to you. All right, let's go meet our guest for today and hear another story. Welcome, Julia. So nice to have you here today. Where are you joining us from?
I am in Martinsburg, West Virginia. It's a stone's throw from our farm in Bunker Hill, West Virginia, where we moved in 2021 to raise children and plant other kinds of seeds too and see them blossom. We moved from the DC area. So I am joining you from an office where I hope no fire alarms or power outages occur. Bear with me.
Should we tell them?
Happens, you know? It's a wonderful example of yoga therapy at work because approximately 15 minutes ago, I had a fire alarm blaring and I couldn't log on. And I was having a bit of a frenetic moment. And I know that I have the tools to downregulate. And that is even when it feels difficult, just knowing that you have the ability, just that knowledge in and of itself, as I say in my writing, just awareness is treatment. So just the knowledge that I can downregulate is part of what de-escalates the nervous system. That's the in.
Completely agree. It reminds me, we recently got a hot tub, and I told my husband, just knowing I have that tool at the end of the day, like helps me all day long. But it's similar to what you're saying, knowing that you have the tool of breath or centering or drawing your attention inward or mini meditation, knowing you have those techniques and tools in your pocket. That in itself makes it
Yeah.
easier to deal with chaos.
Yeah, it's the shortcut. It really is. So much of my work is grounded in the development of agency because without it, we flounder. And if we know that we can at least do the next best thing, The next best thing is, figuring out how to launch Zoom on my phone, right? I don't have to solve big electronic problems. I just do the next best thing. That gives me the agency that I need to get off the cortisol train, is how I've been talking about it a lot lately. Get off the cortisol train and get back into parasympathetic realm where we can have fluid conversations.
What occurs to me when I hear you say having the agency to do the next best thing is you have to trust yourself that you'll be able to draw upon that when needed. I think so many people don't trust themselves, but let's just say you had to use your phone today instead of a computer because there was a myriad of obstacles and complications, but you found the next best thing. You're able to do the interview on your phone. You trust, I think, and I trust you, that if the phone runs out of battery, we'll figure out the next best thing.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Like, I saw you just take a big breath, like, please, God, no. But we
Well,
will.
yeah, and that's exactly right. As we know from our trade and our practice, which for me is not a professional practice, it's a spiritual practice, it's a life practice, that the expectation of challenge is challenge in and of itself, right? So if I'm sitting here talking to you, thinking in with 40% of my brain about all of the things that could go wrong, I'm not able to be present with you. I'm not able to drop in. But trusting, knowing that there is a way forward, expecting instead of the external disaster, the internal capacity, it's such a buoy for the spirit. Like evolutionarily speaking, the frenetic nature of our current reality is anathema. So many inputs at once, so many considerations at once. I'm more and more in my life trying to kind of distill things to the simplest form. It's part of why we moved to a farm in West Virginia. I just got tired of not just traffic, but I got tired of being pulled in so many directions. Like even just going down a busy street, I love cities, but I don't like the feeling of parts of me being pulled, especially away from being able to be present with my kids, being able to be present with my husband, my clients. So I realized that in order to focus myself and do the work of my heart, it required simplifying, simplifying, simplifying.
I completely agree. It's this quality of how we want to show up in the world. And to some degree, I mean, I do have to say, and I'm sorry to say this to both of us, but it's a little bit of a privilege to
Oh, yeah.
get to contemplate this idea of being present in our lives and structuring it in a way that we could move to a farm or I moved to Minnesota for the same reason. And I also feel that there's responsibility with it. If we were given this opportunity to structure our lives with more simplicity, then we have a responsibility to be of service and to do our work well with our clients, our families. I take that very seriously. It's not for me to squander on my fun. I'm going to use that to do good in the world.
I consider connection a vitamin. When we give ourselves the opportunity to simplify, as I said, to get calm and quiet, I think that's the source also of connection. So we're getting calm and quiet internally so that we have the ability to reach out and touch. We're not operating from a place of kind of high trauma, anxiety. It's reinforcing for the external work to do the internal work. They're partners in the process. I am capable of giving because I have given to myself this nourishment. And it's not to say that my life doesn't currently have its challenges. I mean, four kids and
Yeah. Well,
now,
it doesn't feel like a lot of privilege when you've got four little ones above
Well,
you at all times.
people see me in the supermarket and they say, "Wow, you've got your hands full." And I say, "My heart too." That's my slang. But yeah, it's a lot. Life is a lot. I mean, no matter what you're walking, my goodness, like just the sheer privilege of being alive is so much. What a great gift we are all given, no matter what shape it takes to experience this sensation of living. I find myself awed by it every day, especially watching my youngest toddle. It's just seeing it all over again, the learning that goes into every moment and the reminder that that's the way each of our moments can be, even at 43. The wonder with which he reaches for the morning light when we're taking our walk. It's like, God, that is God. It just drops me in. Which is why I say in the book that I wrote that motherhood has been my greatest teacher. It's so funny to reflect on now. I was worried when I found out that I was having my oldest. You know, is this going to take me away from my spiritual path? And my teacher laughed at me, you know, like as if like I had to be some sort of ascetic to do the work. No, she said, this will be your teacher. And it has proved to be right. It's proved to be so right, so wise.
I want to go back for a moment just to finish a thread that we were talking about, presence and awareness and relationship. On page 29 of your book, which is Yoga Therapy for the Whole Mother, Developing Awareness in Service of Postpartum Healing. We're going to get into that deeply in a moment. But you said that Irvin Yalom, who wrote The Gift of Therapy, he thought back to all the people he'd worked with, and he thought, oh, they're going to remember these big aha moments. They're going to remember the realizations they had about themselves and the interventions that I did and provided them with. And when he went back and talked to them, it sounds like they didn't remember any of that, but they did remember the quality of connection they had with him.
Yes, that was one of the greatest teachings from that book. When I was lead clinic supervisor at MUAH, I made that book required reading because I consider The Gift of Therapy one of the most important texts for anyone who wants to do this work. Every page is a teaching. It is awesome. It is one of the books that I recommend for every yoga therapist, even if they consider themselves more Anamaya Kosha than Manomaya Kosha. But it is truly the quality of the relationship that matters, the quality of the connection. I know that for so many of my clients, our space has been the first time that they have ever experienced someone truly present who cares. I find that if I am able to fall in love with my clients, and to fall in love with their path and their healing, then I am able to be, it's almost like the cartilage or the gel, to be the connective tissue that bridges their inability to see themselves as capable and whole and healed and their ability. I offer that space, but they are the ones who are actually doing the work. They're the ones who are the containers for the work, capable of it. But I find that I kind of fit into their spaces and offer this synaptic bridge between the part of them that doesn't know they're capable and the part of them that does. I mean, even I was reflecting yesterday on a new client that I have. I just thinking about him, I feel so strongly his pain and hope. And because I am able to kind of, I know it sounds strange, but really fall in love with his story, I am able to be an example of what it is to be loved for him. And that's so important because that might be the first time that he feels that, right? It might be the first time that he feels held. It might be the first time that a client ever hears the truth or knows that telling the truth is important. Right? Maybe a client comes from a family that no one ever said the truth. Maybe they all kind of hid in the darker corners and after a big fight never said anything. And here we are just telling each other the truth. I use disclosure very incisively, like, you know, my own disclosure to my clients, but it's why I actually think it's a modality in and of itself. What if I told you that I know that what you're seeking is possible because I have actually sought it and found it? The basic tenet of yoga therapy is that you and I are no different. Right. We have the same light that illuminates each of our paths from within. So I know that what you're going through is difficult, and I know that what you're going through is surmountable. I know it. Being able to be that present with a client and honest and raw, I actually think is a really powerful tool in and of itself. The worst thing that we can do for a client is put ourselves up on some sort of darn pedestal because that defeats the capacity for connection before it's even available. I mean, then you're not, then sameness, oneness isn't the basic operating principle. You know, then there's some sort of superiority and inferiority, and then you're not doing yoga at that point, you know, and you're certainly not seeking connection.
I want to go back to something you said. I didn't, number one, know you were the supervisor of the experiential portion of the
Yeah.
master's degree at MUH. I knew you had worked there, but I didn't know in what capacity. So that's cool.
Yeah.
And I was talking to the MUH students yesterday. And I said something that I often say that ties into your work. And I don't know how people feel about it, but it's my deep belief. It's what I've been taught by my teachers in India that the yamas, the ways we interact socially in India, those might be taught starting between conception all the way to maybe age 8 or 9. And that if the fabric of one's family structure, their support structure, for whatever reason, isn't a strong, healthy tapestry, which I would say for most of us it wasn't, it's almost like the way we interact socially with one another, there's big gaps, there's tears. Like we don't know how to be nonviolent to one another. We don't know how to tell the truth to one another, all the things. And therefore, what I was taught by my teachers is that yoga therapy is almost a remothering. Healthy boundaries, compassion with love, with kindness, but also telling truth. It's the type of work that we should have or could have gotten in our early life and didn't. And that now we can go back and be with someone, not as their mother, we're not going to be like that, but that spirit that you're talking about, I think, of I really am here to serve you, to be with you, to help you, to support you. I believe in you. I know you can do it. Those are all the things that a mother would say as a child trying to take their first few steps or trying to crawl up some stairs or read a book, or we all
Yes.
miss that. And so when I heard you talking, it reminded me of that the essence of yoga therapy and the essence of India is Mother India. But then that ties in this beautiful book that you've written, Yoga Therapy for the Whole Mother. And when I read your book, I said to myself, this is not a book about pregnancy and having a baby and what do you do in the fourth trimester after the baby's born. Sure, there's a lot of information in this book about birth and beyond and pregnancy and all that. But this book actually, to me, the reason I fell in love with it, never having been a biological mother, never having been pregnant, I fell in love with this book because to me, it was a guidebook on how to be a great yoga therapist and create and cultivate that energy of what I'm going to bring to my clients. Like every page of the book, I think all yoga teachers, all yoga therapists, probably even psychotherapists could really learn something from your book about presence and awareness and how to be in relationship and bring that energy that will help people heal those tears and those holes in what they didn't get when they were a child.
Thank you. It gives me such pleasure, and I feel so gratified to know that that is what you took from the book, because that is what I poured into the book. And in a sense, my kind of niche, because I have had so many darn kids, was the postpartum experience. And it matters to me because I feel like a country, a society is only as healthy as its most vulnerable, and women and their newborns are the definition of that. So it matters to me that this population in particular is served. And I felt maybe inspired by Yalom in a certain way, but I felt very called, very keen to share the teachings which have formed my own kind of gestalt experience of what it is to be a therapist. Beyond that, my own maturation as someone seeking a spiritual life, seeking to walk a spiritual path, awareness, as my teacher, who's not a yogi, said to me, the one person in this life who I would call my teacher with a capital T, awareness begets choice. And that is one of the most clarifying statements, because it gives us, as we started this conversation with, capacity, ability, agency. And so they are partners in this process, and it's an ever unfolding process.
Can you unpack that? Awareness begets choice. Can you just unpack that a little bit?
I have one client who I've been working with for about 7 years, and almost every session she kind of laughs and she says, "Wow, once you have awareness, you have choice." Because once we become aware over a pattern, we have the ability to choose whether or not we want to continue to live it. And that goes for everything, from how we move our bodies, to how we move our minds, to how we move our breath, to what discernment we shine on something, to what joy we seek to find in something. Whether or not we make lemonade from lemons is a choice, right? If lemons are only sour, if our awareness of a lemon is only that it's sour, then it stays a sour fruit. But the fact that we have the awareness of a lemon being able to blend with this other thing called sugar gives us a whole other nourishment from it. So, I mean, it's such a simple concept that once I have awareness over something, I then get to choose what I do with it. But it's actually the foundation for, I think, almost everything we do, you know?
We're going to take just a little break here to talk about something that matters to us at the optimal state. And that is our Monday night community that has been together for many, many years now. And we'd like to invite you in. On Monday nights, we have a topic of the month. And in October, that happens to be integrating mindfulness into your daily life to manage pain. Now, whether you have pain or you're a yoga teacher, an Ayurvedic practitioner or a yoga therapist, there's so much to learn about pain care as it relates to emotional intelligence and self-awareness, and basically how to manage ourselves physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So each week we have a yoga sutra that we talk about that relates to the topic. We do some postures, very gentle. We do some breath work, some meditation, and then we come back together at the end for a discussion. So we would love to see you in October of 2025 and join us for our Monday night classes. You can find the link to sign up in the show notes. Thank you for listening. And now we go back to the podcast episode and our guest telling their story.
Like my children, when I'm helping them down regulate from tantrums, which is really hard because I get really upregulated too when they tantrum. So both of us have to like go down regulate. But once I help them ease into the place where they know that they can contain the feeling, that's so big. That's another form of awareness. I can contain this feeling. It does not have to dominate me. I don't have to be afraid of it. I don't have to react to it. I can contain it. It will pass because everything dies in life. I have the choice about how I respond to it. So much of the unchoice, so much of the choicelessness in life is grounded in the illusion that we don't have the ability to contain what we're feeling. This ball of rajas, this ball of emotion, anxiety, anger, frustration, whatever it is too hot for me to handle. So I have to toss it to someone else, or I have to stuff it down deep where I won't feel it. Both of those are illusions. No, I can sustain myself through this. Rajas is one way that the matter in this universe moves. Can I pull sattva into it? Right? Can I pull tamas into it in groundedness, steadfastness? Can I shift the nature of this energy that I'm feeling? The answer is always yes. And sometimes it's just by taking a deep breath. Sometimes it's by waiting it out. And you wait it out and you know that you can sustain yourself through it. The other side of an emotion is it's passing, right? So if we know that nothing in life lasts forever, then the illusion that this thing will break me is just that.
Right.
That's one of the funniest realizations that I've ever had. Like, literally made me laugh out loud. I was taking a walk one day and I realized that every difficult thing I have ever experienced in life that I thought would break me didn't. If you think about what that actually said, all of those moments that felt absolutely impossible passed. So, this
Yes.
moment right now, this moment of intense challenge that feels as though it will break me, won't, because I have 43 years of data to tell me otherwise. You know, and that is, again, that's the gift of awareness. That's what helps pacify, downregulate, you know, in those moments of stress.
This too shall pass.
Yes, exactly.
Well, let's get into your book a little bit because you sent it to me several months ago, I think maybe back in February, and it arrived in this beautiful envelope that had been, I think, reused from one of my children's something or other. And I was like, what is this? Package has arrived. And I love that you reused something to send it to me. That was so special. But one of the first things I read about in the book that I was like, wow, this isn't just for postpartum moms, although that is the target audience, but was this idea of disordered body image that moms sometimes have, maybe after they've been pregnant. But everything you said about that disordered body awareness, I was like, oh my gosh, I think all women have this. This is a thing. So can you talk about that a little bit?
It's the crux of what got me into yoga, and it has kind of formed the basic thesis for why I realized that I found healing and why I sought to share healing. And it was the recognition. So when I first got into yoga, I'm from Los Angeles, where eating disorders and body image issues are birthrights. It's just what you grow up with. It's why my kids are not growing up in Los Angeles, because the weather ain't worth it. And I remember I broke my ankle. I had reconstructive surgery. I was also in the throes of just a terrible relationship to my body. And I found yoga. I'd found it years before, kind of dabbled, but I really found yoga after that surgery because it was really the only thing that I could do. Couldn't run, couldn't do my, cardio frenzy that I was addicted to prior to that. And I would leave every class feeling better. I didn't know what better meant, but I just would leave feeling better, less reactive, and more in love with myself, more in touch with myself. And I mean those two words as they like in their full potency, right? So that carried with me. I moved to DC, did my first master's in international relations and conflict management, said, no, I don't want to work for State Department or Defense Department. They're just two sides of the same coin. I'm going to figure something else out. So I went to India for a year, and that's where I did my first teacher training. So came back, started teaching yoga, started realizing that I wasn't just teaching asana, I was teaching a relationship to yourself. I was teaching a relationship to your body, to your breath, to your mind. The asana, I realized, was a conduit, was a container for this greater work. I should say actually that it was my first therapist in Los Angeles who got me, who told suggested that I do yoga. In my teaching yoga, realized that it was therapy. My yoga classes were therapy for me in many ways, definitely for my students. And that was the feedback that I was getting. I chanced upon the degree from MUAH. I was a member of the first cohort.
Oh, you were? We're just going into the 14th
Isn't that
cohort.
incredible?
Thank you for being part of that foundation.
We were pioneers. We were building the runway as the jet airplane is taking off.
It's true.
I distinctly remember a moment in the coursework with Heather Mason, actually came and did a weekend with us. And she talked about how yoga changes the brain, and in particular, how the insular cortex changes, how the area of the body that's responsible for body awareness changes, thickens. And I remember having in that moment this aha, aha, holy smokes, this, whoa, this is what's going on. Because I am practicing paying attention, and asana and breath are such good conduits for the practice of paying attention. I am developing awareness of my body, in which I am then able to see myself more clearly. I was already working with my teacher, and I had, I guess, kind of my higher self also came into the picture and was guiding me forward. So, infused into the development of awareness, I had this deep sense of love and compassion for myself. But the two were partners. So, in order to see myself more clearly and capable of love and compassion, I needed to actually practice seeing myself clearly. So, the relationship between paying attention to our limbs as we move and stretch and breathe is the space in which we get to practice paying attention to our being as something deserving of love. Those two things proved fundamentally connected, like a switch just flipped on. And I wrote this idea of disordered body awareness as kind of my final master's thesis, but that's kind of the gist of it for the program, because it felt so clear, like this is something, this is really important. This is the crux of some important work. It then sat on my computer for a couple of years. I had three kids as I was kind of toying with this, understanding more and more about it. And I did a heck of a lot of research around it. And all of that research is available on my website. All of the research that underpins the book would have been about 600 pages long if we had put in all of the research that I had done. I initially turned in a draft that was twice as long, and she said, "We can't. I'm sorry."
And it's already so dense, like you have no idea. I can't. I was thinking, I don't see books this comprehensive very often.
I have a touch of obsessive compulsion. So it's like if I see that there is a rainbow, I can't not put in every color. And so the book didn't feel complete without a literature review for every single protocol because I wanted people to know, like, you know, even though I think that there is a whole lot of difficulty, challenge with current research standards, peer-reviewed research standards, and that's a whole topic for another podcast, but all of that's available on my website under the additional materials page because I wanted people to know, like, this is where I got this idea from. Because also, speaking of awareness and choice and agency, I have always had distinct discomfort with being told that something is true without being able to experience it. And so, you know, when people are like, yeah, like this asana or this mudra will cure such and such, think, I don't know about that, man. I want to know how, I want to know why, because I think one of the worst things that we can do with this very powerful toolbox of yoga therapy is to degrade it by aggrandizing it unnecessarily. Like it's already so powerful. All of these ideas that yoga cures this or da da da. I believe in the power of sympathetic downregulation, impacting inflammation and positively impacting immunity. Like all of that is true. But to try to put it into some short catchphrase, it really, really does a disservice to us because it's too easy to push that aside. If we actually talk about the mechanisms behind why it works, I think we have a much better opportunity to get a foothold in the medical field. And that's been another kind of parallel interest of mine. I was also the site supervisor for Howard County General when MUIH was at Howard County. So I would bring yoga therapists into the hospital. And I learned very quickly that this thing that I was very passionate about turned a lot of people off if I attempted to oversell it, use language that didn't resonate within the medical community, within the allopathic community. I'm also really keen to not oversell yoga therapy by undermining its actual benefits. Does that make sense?
It's so clear. And like you said, we don't have to. Just
We
that
don't.
state of we can downregulate, which is going to affect our nervous system, our moods, our energy levels, our inflammation. All those things are proven to be true. It's not just enough, it's awe-inspiring.
Exactly.
Like that,
Exactly.
let's just stick with that because people understand it. It is true. We don't have to go any further than that. And nobody else is really doing that like we are.
And that also is a big part of this book. I've got a huge section on stress and fatigue and how to approach it from the yoga therapy perspective, which is, you know, certainly not only mothers, new mothers are experiencing that. That's one of the sections in the book. The pranamaya kosha and the manomaya kosha, I feel, are really useful for anyone who's seeking guidance in breath and mind. So this brings us back to awareness, because if I can bring awareness to my capacity to take that next deep breath, to take that next elongated, prolonged exhale, right? And I know that when I exhale, it acts upon my vagus. I know that when I exhale, it induces a parasympathetic response. I know that at least I can purse my lips together and take that exhale and produce a change in my system. Awareness, choice, result. All bound up in that sweet little package of one exhale. And if you can teach someone who's suffering that procession, then they can enlarge that to their life in general.
Yeah. Bringing it back to motherhood, if you did a whole workshop around, I'm going to teach moms how to have one long exhale whenever they're feeling stressed out, that would be powerful.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I do with my clients. A lot of therapists start off with like really, really in-depth histories. I find myself less and less interested in like deep, deep dive session one and more interested in let's figure out one tool that you can take with you and practice between session one and session two. Because you don't need the archaeological dig right now. You need truth. And the stuff will come up as it's meant to throughout the course of our sessions. What we can give you right now is the ability to get through tomorrow or even just the rest of today,
Or the
right?
next hour.
Then the next hour, exactly. My favorite practice is hand to heart, right? I mean, just this, right? This too shall pass, man. My entire degree at MUH, really what it taught me was that yoga therapy is just this simple.
Funny, we had to get a master's degree
Yeah,
to
right.
learn how to put your hand on your heart and do a long exhale and say, "This too shall pass."
Know. I know. Life is often that way. I look at my baby boy, my youngest, came into this world with the universe in his eyes. I mean, you stare into the eyes of a newborn, and he is oneness, sameness, wonder. And then I spend the next 5 to 10 years teaching him to individuate and to have an identity and an ego and a form and a name and a self and a postal address and likes and dislikes. And then, if he is lucky, and I hope all of my children are, he gets to spend the next 80, working his way out of the trappings of the ego. It's so funny. But it's survival, of course. He needs to know that he's a separate person. And so it's my job as mother to teach him that. But it's hopefully also my job as mother to help him find his way back to the place where he sees himself as something greater and connected and capable.
That's the irony, and I think it's for all of our clients too, is we have to solidify an identity before we can let go of an identity. You almost need an identity to survive in this world, to interface. But then remembering who we really are and how we can have that interface happening and also observe, like, I am something so much bigger beyond that interface.
Yeah, and that makes me think of another part of the book, which is about the development of meaning and purpose. One of the great ills I think we're suffering currently is the lack thereof, meaning and purpose. If we're not actually born to be mindless consumers, what is our meaning and purpose? And that is a big part of this identity. I've never thought of dharma as like it was not my dharma to be dot dot dot. I've never felt that. I felt that it's my dharma to be a teacher and to continue to learn. That is the path that I walk. And so, in terms of meaning and purpose and the intersection with identity, identity is not so that we can attach to the thing. Identity is so that we can find meaning and purpose, so that we can detach from the thing and find connection.
Yeah.
Because through meaning and purpose, we inevitably do find connection. We find what drives us, what makes our hearts sing. In my experience, inevitably, there is connection when we find that path.
Yeah. I'm just sitting here reflecting on you having gotten the master's degree in yoga therapy and how that impacted you as a mother with these four children. I mean, it seems like it's similar to your book. It's shaped your worldview, your spiritual path, the paradigm through which you mother your children and write books. Obviously, there's many factors that make us who we are, but you really do seem to view the world through the lens of the Panchamaya model and some of these primary philosophies of yoga.
Yeah, I do. I have said to my clients, and I have reflected on the fact that it's not enough to have a cognitive appreciation of something. Like we can have the aha moment where we think, oh, I get it. I get it, right? I get it. But unless that knowledge is put into some sort of experiential form, it doesn't actually alchemize into wisdom.
Right.
And that's what motherhood has been. It's been the alchemy for the teachings. Because mommy loses her mind sometimes. Like four kids and a dog and the stressors of life, which abound, sometimes fill me to the brim and I explode, I burst, I fall apart into a puddle. It really happens sometimes feeling like it happens regularly. But what I also know is that, and this is a phrase that I use a lot with my clients, and it's not my own, and I actually can't even tell you where I first heard it, but it is one of the most powerful phrases, I think, for the therapeutic process, motherhood in particular. But it's not about the rupture, it's about the repair. So when that does happen with my kids, and when I know that I haven't put the principles that I know to be fundamental to a life well lived into work, into practice in that moment, I know that I can come back. I know that all is not lost. Nothing is ever finished. There's no ruin, you know? I mean, so long as we're still breathing, there's no ruin. There's always opportunity for repair. So being able to come back to my kids and say, hey, you know what? Mama messed up. I'm so sorry. I made a mistake. I love you. And maybe I do some explanation. Maybe I just put my arms around them. The ability to be discerning, rigorously honest, surrender, find contentment even in the challenge. This is my favorite definition of tapas from Donna Farhi, to have burning enthusiasm for the task. Like, feel it. I feel the way it ignites me. You know, so many other principles at play. Self-study, certainly, being one of them. But like, I can reflect on how every single yama and niyama comes to the fore of my almost daily life as a parent. And when I see it, not just as something that's happening in the physical body, but in my breath and in my mind, and then yes, I can use my capacity for discernment to shift something more into alignment. And I can always reach for joy because I know it is my essence, right? Yes, all of this comes to bear. Because what the heck is the point if it doesn't? You know, like I didn't get into this just to sell a book or teach a class. I got called to this work because it made the most sense out of anything that I'd ever come in contact with. Prayer without intention is poetry. Nothing wrong with poetry. There's a hollowness to prayer without intention. And ritual without intention is theater. What's the point of these rituals if we're not actually infusing them with the intention to make them whole, to make them real, to feel them in ourselves? You know, like it or not, we're experiential beings with bodies. So, yes. It makes no sense. I wrote an article, it's on my Substack. It call it Making Yoga Your Business, because I wrote it early on in my teaching. I was so surprised when I first started teaching yoga to see people doing the business of yoga and being so terrible to each other and no insight about it. Like, it's so curious that you can parrot something and have it never actually like enter you, like slice you open. So it has never made sense to me. And I don't think that I would be able to do the work that I do as therapist, mother, teacher, partner, seeker, if I didn't embody these principles. I wouldn't be able to be with you right now with my whole heart if I didn't. So there's no other way for me.
I felt that in the potency of your words in the book. And, you know, something that occurred to me while you were talking is that if we can escape being sliced open, we will. And therefore, like with four children, there's no escaping that. You're going to get in that boiling soup. There's no getting away from it. So that's when you say that. You know, the teachings can be cognitive, and then through motherhood, they've come into this experiential realm and they're part of you. You've been sliced open. Like, I think it's interesting to just reflect on your life path and all of our life paths. Like, what are the things that sliced us open? Because those are the things, the situations that we actually had to embody the teachings. Probably if we could have escaped of anything, we would, and we do. Who wants to be sliced open?
Well, and yet, you know, we know from teachers before us, like Viktor Frankl, who I also reference in my book, the founder of logotherapy, we know from his work, The Man's Search for Meaning, that what is to give light must endure burning.
Yes.
Or Rumi, you know, the wound is where the light enters you. We know from these teachers that this is exactly how it works. And to try to avoid it, we know the dangers of avoidance. And that's actually, you know, bringing us back full circle. Disordered body awareness is the result of avoidance. And so the only way to approach it is to lean into the experience. The only way to counter avoidance is to approach. And if we are in the container, being held by a loving and compassionate space, which I hope everyone is when they're with a yoga therapist or a therapist like me, knowing that we are capable of approaching with love and compassion for ourselves, no matter what we find. A big treatise of mine has been in my own life and for my clients, no dark corners in your mind. I love Jung's shadow self. It's so important. But the shadow self, which is actually a really important part of ourself, undeniable, but I think it only exists when we keep parts of ourself dark from ourself. When we welcome the shadow self, that's where real integration comes into play. And that's when connection and healing occurs. There are, as internal family systems therapist, beautiful book called No Bad Parts, which everyone should read also. But welcoming, integrating parts of ourselves, seeing ourselves as whole and complete. I mean, this is, these sound like big phrases, but they are actually bite by bite works. And I say bite by bite because I use this with my students a lot, my clients a lot. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Like the idea of coming into a relationship with ourselves as whole and complete. Big phrase, big idea. Let's break it down. What does that mean on an almost a minute by minute basis? And that's how we're going to get you there.
Yep. Beautifully said. Thank you so much for sharing with us so passionately and so present. I can feel, like I said before, the potency coming out of you, probably because you are deeply connected to yourself on spiritual level, physical level, pranic level. Like you can feel that in a person. So I love that we got to spend this time together. And I just want to share with our listeners how they can get in touch with you because you're a yoga therapist and a licensed mental health care practitioner. Your website is called www.developingawarenesstherapy.com. Developingawarenesstherapy.com. And as we finish up today, is there anything you'd like to tell the audience about your website or some of the work that you're doing?
Well, I guess I'd like to say that if anyone wants to connect with me, please do. I love talking with burgeoning yoga therapist. It was one of my favorite things leading the clinic at MUH was being able to help people figure out where to put their feet on the path. I'm also available for yoga therapy sessions, telehealth, and if you're in West Virginia, you can come see me in person, which is really not that far from the DC area. I'm just a stone's throw from DC, about 90 minutes. I'm curious to have any conversations that anyone is seeking because that's, a big part of this as we began talking about today is connection. So connect with me, please. I'm here.
And your book, Yoga Therapy for the Whole Mother, which is published by Singing Dragon. Like I said, I highly recommend it for all humans, even though there is so much beautiful information in here for mothers, especially. I just feel like I want to open this book multiple times a month and just say, okay, what is she going to teach me today? Assessment through the Vayus. Okay, I like that. That's an amazing section I just opened to, page 211. So,
Awesome. Thank you so much. It really warms me. This was like having another kid. It really was. I always said I wanted five kids. So here we go, because I just poured myself into it. So I feel seen when you are enjoying it as you do. Thank you.
thank you, Julia. We appreciate you, and I hope you have a wonderful day with your children.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now that we have made it through the obstacles of being together today, it actually we're almost like, oh, maybe this can happen. And I'm glad that we pushed through and
Me too.
kept connected. So
Thank you. Thank you for making it happen. And I look forward to being in touch whenever we are.
thank you. Thank you, Julia, for being with us today and sharing your life experience and your wisdom as a human, a mother, a woman, someone who is deeply experiencing all the different roles in her life, someone who's willing to be present, even in the uncomfortable moments, to remember that we do have a choice, and that through the awareness that there is a choice in every moment, life actually can transform and shift moment by moment by moment. So thank you for all of those things. They are such good reminders. Thank you for reminding us that it is through things like physical postures where we breathe and lift the arms up, inhale, and we breathe and lower the arms down slowly, exhale. It's through that connection with our limbs that we can actually connect with something much deeper, with our breath, with our spirit, that moving your body and breathing and feeling and sensing is one of the most beautiful and important things that we can do in this life. It's not exercise. It's something so much deeper that, as you said, when we come out of the yoga class and we just feel calm and at peace and feel good, we don't even know why, but we have connected with something much deeper inside of ourselves. So thank you for all of those reminders. And also, we talked a little bit about Maryland University of Integrative Health and how Julia was part of the very first class almost over 13 years ago, and then stayed on and became the practicum supervisor. And so I want to welcome each and every one of you to check out our master's degree at Maryland University of Integrative Health, as well as a new program that we're just unveiling this fall that is specific to anyone who already has a master's in a different field and they want to get a post-master's certificate in therapeutic yoga. And what that means is that you could take the skill set of therapeutic yoga and bring it into the setting that you're already working, whether you're a doctor, a nurse, a social worker, an educator, a teacher, a contemplative chaplain at a hospital. There's so many people that already have a master's degree that might like to get a post-master's certificate from MUIH. So it's a brand new program that I'm starting in the fall with Marlisa Sullivan and the entire team at MUIH. And we look forward to welcoming you and getting you into some of our open houses to tell you more about that program. All right, everybody, have a great week and we will talk soon. Thank you. Thank you to our listeners at the Yoga Therapy Hour for listening each week and also sending emails of thanks and gratitude and letting us know how the Yoga Therapy Hour has changed your life. Every time we receive one of those, we think, okay, we're going to keep going. This is hard work, but we got this. We're making a difference in the world in our own unique way. So thank you again for listening. We are so grateful for all of you, our listeners. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.